If you haven't been to Redwood National Park, you've probably been advised to go before you die. Northern California has trees as old as the ages and as tall as skyscrapers. These giants are rarer as well than they once were. The vast majority were cut down in the 20th century, and most of what remains are owned by state and national parks. We're joined today by Dave Romer, a deputy superintendent of Redwood National Park, to talk about why these parks are important and what's so special about Redwood Forest anyway. Dave, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks for having me on.
So, Dave, let's just get right to it. What makes redwoods unique among trees?
Well, obviously, they're very, very tall, and it's hard to really grasp that if you haven't seen it. And what's also remarkable, I was just thinking yesterday, listening to people who have traveled to other forests in the world, in Costa Rica and places, and they come back and they're like, well, that was it. So kind of after you've been here, you've really seen sort of this ancient primeval kind of an experience.
So once people see an old growth redwood forest, they tend to be unimpressed by other forests. Why is it then you think that the I guess I should ask you, what is one of the questions that you get asked by the public most as a deputy superintendent at Redwood National Park?
Well, there's a lot of interest in how we manage what we do, and a lot of interest and a lot of explaining of the unique partnership that Redwood National and State Parks have here.
And when we talk about Redwood National and State Parks, where are we talking about?
Yeah, so we're in Del Norte County and Humboldt County. The park is kind of long and skinny north-south for the most part, so we're spread out just a little bit.
And are there tribal lands abutting the park or really near to it?
Oh, of course. So the park is comprises ancestral lands of the Yurok people, of Toluic people, also of the Cholula tribe, and so we have a very close relationship with the modern day representatives of those tribes as sovereign nations, and it's a very, very important part of what the national parks do, what the state parks do, do in part to our trust responsibilities and our government to government relationships with those tribes. So it's a very, very important part of our partnership, and of course, it's also a tremendously important part of the story of the parks themselves.
Yeah, and it seems like the Redwood National and State Parks, the location there, a lot of times you look at a national park and it's this kind of amoeba of green out in the middle of somewhere, versus Redwood National Park is right there among a bunch of other jurisdictions for land management and a bunch of communities. We were just talking about some of the tribes that have been in the region and are still in the region, as well as the communities. How do your management strategies work with the people living around you? I think it might be worth noting too that eminent domain played a role in the creation of Redwood National Park. Are you still feeling the sting of that today?
Yeah, that's a great question. Redwood National Park is still looking at kind of the National Park Service as a whole, a relatively new park. The three state parks within the federal boundary were established in the 1920s. However, most people in our communities still have memories and direct experiences with the 1968 legislative taking, which established Redwood National Park, and then the 1978 expansion, which added a great deal to the park in Redwood Creek in Humboldt County. And so those two congressional bills and the very long and complicated process of acquiring lands and compensating landowners, not just large timber companies, but small landowners too. That took decades to play out, and it's something you can still feel on the landscape. Although I think most of us that work here at Redwood do have some connections to our local communities. And there's a lot of goodwill there, so I wouldn't want to paint a picture that we're surrounded by these communities that are mainly harboring bitterness and resentment over the events of the last 40 years. It's evolving.
Uh-huh. We are talking today with Deputy Superintendent of Redwood National Parks, Dave Romer. I'm Emily Curitan, hosting for Jeffrey Riley. You're welcome to join the conversation, 800-838-3760. We'd love to hear your stories about Redwood National and State Parks or your questions for Deputy Superintendent Dave Romer. Now, Dave, can we get a better picture maybe of when we talk about redwoods, and especially the intro I gave, we kind of imagine these hallowed cathedrals of 2,000-year-old trees. Can you give me a sense of how much of Redwood State National Parks is this old growth habitat, and how much has been logged in the last 100 years?
Yeah, it's close to a 50-50 split. There are these areas that were preserved in the 1920s that became the state parks, Jed Smith, Prairie Creek, and Del Norte Coast Redwood State Parks. And they have beautiful, intact, continuous areas of old-growth forest, wonderful to go to visit, to walk through, to camp in, to recreate in, and to be inspired by. And those forests exist within Redwood National Park as well. Lady Bird Johnson Grove, Tall Trees Grove, a large contiguous tract, especially in Lost Man Creek. These are amazing places to go visit. We also, as you know, purchased in 68 and 78 lands that had been severely cut over. And so restoration, rehabilitation and continuing management of those lands to attain a future old-growth redwood condition is a large part of what we do, and a big part of the challenge of managing a park that's very different from all the national parks that came before it. Parks before Redwood tended to already be intact and beautiful and jaw-dropping scenic wonders. This one still had some creating, some fixing, and some establishment that some work like that needed to be done.
And from an organizational and a management perspective, did that turn some things on its head for the parks? If prior, you know, you're based on a model where you're dealing with pristine habitat a lot of the time, and here, is this a big restoration project for an organization like the National Park Service?
The National Park Service had really never done anything like it. So in 78, when the lands in Redwood Creek came to the Park Service, Congress gave the charge for the service to begin restoration work to repair damaged streams and watersheds, to remove roads and stop sediment from getting into Redwood Creek. And it was a brand new beginning. And there were a lot of missteps along the way, a lot of learning. And over the course of a couple of decades, I think we've pioneered some methods that are now the book, the standard practices that land management agencies, private and public, do when they're restoring watersheds, removing roads, and recontouring and restoring what these lands once had.
So one thing that I've seen Redwood pop up in the news in recent years is cases of poaching in the parks. Is this a big problem? And could you give us a sense of how much money? I know a lot of folks in our listening area may have, maybe you've driven down Highway 199 in Del Norte County, would be a prime example to see Stout Grove. And you see these enormous, these bigger than building size trees falling over. How much money is a single one of those trees worth at a mill? just to kind of give us a sense of why people might want to poach?
You know, I don't know the number of what that would be worth at the mill.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's a lot. When the lands for Redwood National Park were purchased, it was probably, and I suspect still is, the most expensive national park that public funds were committed to, because of the tremendous value and utility of the trees that grow on it.
In the last 40 years, I guess we're part of what we invited you here today to talk about is how these values maybe are changing. Can you put a dollar amount on a redwood forest, an old growth redwood forest at this point, given how few of them are left?
It's very hard to value it that way. There is even an economic study. Some students from Harvard were talking to us last year, trying to find ways to value wild lands. And as you know, there's not a market for these things, and so placing a value on them becomes very difficult for economists. It was a pretty fascinating bunch of conversations with them and the methods that they approach towards trying to find out what is a national park worth. And you start by, well, if it wasn't there, what would you pay to have it be there? And then, of course, there's the hard means, too, of looking at what national parks provide by looking at the communities around us and looking at the sales, the tourism. This July, the woman across the street at the grocery store in Oryx said that she's had the hottest year in a long time, and our visitation in the park's been up about 10% this year. So we're noticing a difference of people coming here to see the park. Obviously, it's for these forests, for these unique experiences that you can't have, that people don't have in the other forests and other places in the world.
Well, and that kind of brings us full circle here. I'd love to hear more biologically about the trees. Like you said, this is radio, and we're talking about the sublime, so might mm-hmm. run into a wall here with being able to express it. But the unique climate of the Northern California coast, El Norte and Humboldt counties, where Redwood State National Parks operate and manage these forests, it's a temperate rainforest, right? There's fog and some things maybe that the trees depend on, where they're not going to get them just, 30 miles up the coast. Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, well, it's, the fog that you said right there is a large part of it. It's an important water source for the coast redwoods, and that's what enables them to persist here in this relatively narrow band along the coast of Northern California, south down to maybe Big Sur, and north into Oregon a little bit. But, this is a unique climate that exists here,
do the trees,
refuge in ways.
Do they drink the fog? Is that an accurate layman's understanding?
Well, during the long summer where there's not a lot of rainfall, that fog drip really just gets soaked up like a sponge by these redwood trees. And so as you walk into them, it's radio, so imagine the cool, the shade, the sound of fog drip as you walk through these forests. They're really incredible places.
Yeah, they're a lot quieter than other forests. That's one thing I've noticed in trips to Redwood State and National Park is kind of the hush, as though these trees are really taking up they're the dominant life force in the ecosystem. You don't hear a lot of birds. You don't see a lot of woodland creatures scampering around, that kind of thing. This is just a few examples of what makes the remaining redwoods in Northern California special. We've been here today with Dave Romer, a deputy superintendent of Redwood National Park. Dave, you guys are revamping a foundational document. Can you very quickly tell us what that is and when the deadline is for public comment?
Thanks. Yeah. This is really a refined statement of our core purpose and fundamental values. It's guidance for us. It aims to communicate really the core of what we're about, drawn from congressional legislation with an overlay of our contemporary situation and issues that we're in. And this document is 4 pages. It's rare that a federal agency provides the public with something so brief to ask for comment on. But we're hoping to hear from the public through August 25th as we work on this and kind of set aside this document as the real core statement of what we're about, a way to communicate what makes this park special from other parks and what makes Redwood Forests different from other areas.
All right, Redwood National Park looking to take a step back and asking for your input until August 25th. You can find a link to that foundational document on our website, jeffexchange.org. Dave Romer, Deputy Superintendent with Redwood National Park, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Emily.